welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we are pleased to bring you the Australia World Cup preview as the Socceroos make their journey over to Russia for the 2018 FIFA World Cup. Tonight, I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, and special guest tonight, Mr. Kieran Pender, freelance writer for The Guardian, as well as other outlets. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining me tonight. I want to start out with the questions to you, Kieran, and ask you, what is your tie to Australian football, and why would you be an expert in their in that topic?
Sure. So I'm from Australia, grew up in Australia. I now live in London, but for some of my professional career, have been following the Socceroos. I reported on them at the 2017 FIFA Confederations Cup in Russia. And sort of growing up, the Socceroos were a big part of my childhood. I remember waking up early to watch them lose to Uruguay in World Cup qualifier, sort of final playoffs. I remember when they qualified for the World Cup for the first time in 32 years in 2005 and 2006. I've been a long-time fan and now a follower for professional reasons.
Yeah, no, it's funny. You know, you look into Australian history, at least in the World Cup, you know, in the last 3 years, the last three editions, they made it to consistent qualifications. But going back real further, 1974 was the last time, was the first time they qualified for a World Cup, finishing in the group stage. Then they had to wait, as Kieran, you said, 32 years for their next World Cup in 2006 under the management of Gus Hiddink, where they did finish into the round of 16, only losing to eventual champions Italy in controversial fashion due to a Francesco Totti penalty. 2010-2014, they both qualified for Russia, for the World Cup, but doing so in a more interesting kind of factor. They've moved confederation, leaving the OFC, which is considered one of the weakest confederations, if not the weakest confederation in the world, and then heading into the AFC, the Asian Confederation, where they qualified to two straight World Cups. Doing that in that process, they're the only national team in the world to become champions of two confederations, having won the OFC Nations Cup four times, and then the Asian Cup, which they won in 2015, that eventually qualified them for that Confederations Cup in 2017. So yeah, I mean, here, and you look at the consistency that they've had in recent years, at least in this in the new millennium, for lack of a better term. It's been consistent. They have moved to a much stronger confederation, which has worked, I guess, into their factor qualifying with such countries and powerhouses like Japan, South Korea, among other nations. So I just want to ask you, I mean, you know, given the perception of what you've known or what you've known in Australia, at least from people that you know in Australia, you know, is qualifying for the World Cup now just the expectation, no longer the dream for the Socceroos?
Yeah, it's definitely the expectation. Australia, and we might come on to this shortly, almost didn't qualify for this World Cup. They had to play Syria in a playoff and then Honduras in an intercontinental playoff to secure qualification for Russia 2018. And that really caused a lot of shock in Australia because, as you say, since switching to Asia in 2005, it's just become a formality. I think there's Australian football fans are very much, Europhiles. We look to Europe, we look to the Premier League, we look to the European leagues, and we don't have a lot of focus on Asian football. And so there's not perhaps the appreciation of the increasing quality all across Asia, which meant that come the most recent qualification campaign, we almost didn't make it.
Now let's dive into qualification a little bit deeper here, because one thing that qualification carries with it here to the World Cup is the qualification to the Asian Cup as well, which obviously they did make it through once they made it through the initial stages here. But they finished third in qualifying in a group that featured Japan and Saudi Arabia, both teams that automatically went to the World Cup this year. And like you had mentioned earlier, Kieran, had to travel that difficult road where they have to play the playoff matches against Syria, traveling to Syria for that, and then traveling to Honduras once they defeated Syria. How does the travel affect a team like this in qualification? Because we're talking thousands upon thousands of miles. Is that an additional strain on the team itself?
Hugely so. So I think the most impressive statistic from the Australian qualification campaign was it was the longest in terms of distance travelled and games played in FIFA World Cup history. So they played 22 games with a squad of around 40 players all up. I think the travel costs alone were around $8 million, and just getting, you know, once they were in camp to all of those games took them over 155,000 miles around the world. And that obviously doesn't include a lot of the players coming from all around the world to then join up and go to these games. So, you know, it started in Kyrgyzstan, it went to Jordan, Tajikistan, Bangladesh, Thailand, Japan, Saudi Arabia, Iran. They actually played the Syria playoff in Malaysia because of security concerns, and then went to Honduras. So, you know, hugely taxing both on the players physically, mentally, and then on the national team apparatus. They had to charter flights to a number of the games because it was so difficult to get to on commercial flights. And in the end, that potentially had a major difference in the final return leg against Honduras. The Socceroos flew a chartered flight straight home. The Honduras team went on a commercial flight via the US, I think. And it really showed that the Australian team were a lot fresher in the second leg. So, you know, maybe that, you know, it seems silly, but maybe those logistical differences actually got the Socceroos to the World Cup.
I agree. And much was made actually about that charter flight, because I believe not only did they charter that flight, which cut off, I want to say, 20 hours of travel time to Honduras, but it also, they had, you know, physios on the plane, and they were getting all their treatments as they were flying to that second leg, which really made a difference in terms of bringing that team health-wise as close as they could be to normal, so that they could really have a decisive advantage in that second leg moving on. So I do want to ask you one more quick question. We had really three different sets of heroes for Australian qualification, if you want to look at it that way. We had Tommy Jurek, who was the leading scorer in Asian qualifying, tied on for five goals with four other players. But then we move on to the Syria matchup, where it was Tim Cahill who had scored a brace, leading them to defeating Syria, and then into that Honduran playoff, where it was Mil Jeniak who had the hat trick in the second leg that really put them into the World Cup. Can Australia rely on these three moving forward, or are we looking at maybe a different set of heroes once we hit the ground in Russia?
Tim Cahill is the perennial hero of the Australian national team. He's saved the team from disaster. He's won them games on so many occasions, I've lost count. It's some of our biggest games, you know, at the World Cup. In crucial parts of qualifying, he pops up with goals. But he's not getting any younger. He returned to Australia and signed with an Australian A-League club side, Melbourne City, last year. And I think a lot of people thought that would be sort of towards the end of his career and retirement. Now, he actually fell out with his club and has gone back to England, back to one of the clubs where it all began for him at Millwall. But again, there'd be concerns if Australia is still relying on him in Russia as the goal-scoring threat. Australia not going to score many goals. Mil Jeniak's an important player for the team and is the team captain. But I think we really, if Australia are going to do well in Russia, some of the younger stars are going to need to step up. So they include Aaron Moy in the midfield, who plays for Huddersfield in the Premier League, Tom Rogic, who plays for Celtic in Scotland, and Massimo Luongo, who plays for QPR in the second division in England. Those players who are slightly younger are really the next generation, or the core, the nucleus of the next generation. And if they don't step up in Russia, Australia are going home.
So, yeah, you look at the nitty-gritty now. I mean, this is obviously a tough group for Australia. Obviously, I'm going to draw into these matches real quick. They are in Group C with France. This is their first match to Australia. Is against France on the 16th, followed by a matchup against Denmark on the 21st, and then finishing it off with Peru on the 26th. Now, Kieran, many favor this group as probably a straightforward one for France to get all 9 points and to qualify without trouble. But obviously, this is going to be a battle for second place. You know, you have Australia, you have Peru, who have really been demonstrating their quality in the South American qualifiers, and you have Denmark, a team that's very familiar with a lot of fans around the world, given their top players playing around the top five leagues in the world. So, I mean, how do you view this group? And, you know, if you had to pick one important game, or maybe the toughest game for this Australia team heading into the World Cup, what is it?
It was interesting when the draw was first announced. I think it was received reasonably positively in Australia because we perhaps avoided some of the real top-tier teams, the Brazils, the Germanys. And it was seen that this was a group that we could actually progress from. I think as time has set in and we've started to think more about the task ahead, that initial optimism has faded. And if you look at the FIFA rankings, which are sure, not a perfect metric, but are somewhat reliable, France are ranked 9th in the world, Peru are 11th in the world, Denmark are 12th in the world, and Australia are 37th. So I think, Australia, if it goes to form, Australia will finish last in that group. That said, obviously, you can't be a national team fan and think that pessimistically. So I think France, they're one of the teams, potential contenders for the ultimate tournament win. They were runners-up at the 2016 Euros. They were an incredibly strong team. They're our first game, and so I think Australia have to try and get a draw out of that or a narrow loss to then set up crunch ties with Denmark and Peru. And I think probably that last game against Peru at Sochi will be crucial. If we can get a draw or a narrow loss to France, we can maybe get a draw or beat Denmark. It's going to be that last game that could be the difference between progressing or at least, performing admirably and going home with not a lot of points. We finished last in our group in 2014 in Brazil. We didn't pick up a single point. That was a very tough group, but Australia really needed to do better in Russia. I think one advantage they do have is that they played in the Confederations Cup last year. They did okay. They drew with Cameroon and with Chile. In fact, they looked very good against Chile, which at that point were highly rated, although obviously didn't qualify for the World Cup. Lost to Germany, but in a 3-2 loss. But I think, and having spent quite a bit of time in Russia, the advantage logistically and at a psychological level of having been there, we've played it in Sochi, we've played in they're basing themselves in Kazan, which is where one of the games are. I think having that forward planning, that experience could actually be really important for the Socceroos.
Well, of course, if they're familiar with the territory, familiar even with the stadiums they'll be playing in, I would say that does lend slight advantage, especially over teams like France, Denmark, and especially Peru that may not have even traveled to Russia as of yet to visit these stadiums. For me, I think that what we need to see is probably an Australian team that treads water, let's say, for the first match, even the first two matches, maybe get to that Peru match with an opportunity, I think is probably best case scenario, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's definitely the best case scenario. However, I am wary of Peru. I was in Peru late last year and wrote a feature for SBS, an Australian broadcaster, about our Peruvian opponents. And this is their first World Cup since 1982. They've got a storied football history. They're all football fanatics. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to be very tough to beat. Paulo Guerrero, who's their all-time leading goal scorer, briefly it looked as if he wouldn't be playing because he had a doping suspension that's now been shortened. So he's going to be there. He'll be leading that team. And I think Australia will do well to beat Peru, which is why that last game could be a real crunch match.
No doubt about it. We've talked about a couple of the players here. This is the section where we talk about players to watch. And we've talked about Mil Yedniak. We've talked about Tim Cahill. I want to ask you, we've mentioned a couple other young players, but if you had to put your finger on one player who you think could be a breakout star in this World Cup for Australia, who do you think that player would be?
I might cheat and have two, if that's all right.
Of course.
I think, firstly, Australia has always been very fortunate in its goalkeeping supply. Mm-hmm. We've had goalkeeping legends such as Mark Schwarzer, long-time Fulham player, Zeljko Kalac, who was at AC Milan, and the new generation that's continued. And I think the key player there, who's our number one goalkeeper, Matt Ryan at Brighton in the Premier League, he's an excellent player. He's still very young, came through the local league in Australia, went to Brussels, to Belgium, to Spain, and now in the Premier League. I've always rated him. He's always performed really well for the national team. And I think if Australia are going to progress from the group stage, he's going to have a standout tournament. The other player that often shines for the national team in small patches is Tom Rogic. So he's a very mercurial playmaker. He'll not appear in the game for, you know, 80 of the minutes and then just turn it on and find the match winner. He does that a lot for Celtic in the Scottish Premier League. Again, if Australia are going to do well, his creativity and his goal scoring are going to be needed because of the lack of other options up front. But the problem is Rogic often fits into the midfield alongside Aaron Moy from Huddersfield, and they have never been able to yet gel effectively for the national team. It's like the Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard dilemma that the English team had for a long time, where they just couldn't get those two to click effectively. We have the same problem, perhaps of a slightly lesser calibre, of those two excellent players. But Aaron Moy and Tom Rogic, if they can click at the World Cup, it'll bode well for the Socceroos.
Now, I have one more question here, and it's not necessarily a player question so much as it is a coaching question. We had Bert van Marwijk was promoted or was named the head coach of the Socceroos back in January, and he's going to lead this team through the World Cup. But once the World Cup is over, from what I could see, he was going to be replaced by Graham Arnold after the World Cup. Is that something that weighs on the team's mind moving forward through this tournament?
The coaching situation for the Australian national team has, over the past sort of 8 months, been a real cause for concern. So Australia appointed an Australian coach, Ange Postecoglou, in 2014, who took the team to Brazil, then took them to their success at the Asian Cup on home soil and led them again at the Confederations Cup. Now, towards the end of his tenure, there started to be doubts. He seemed under a lot of pressure. And a week after he qualified, after the Socceroos beat Honduras to qualify for the World Cup, he quit. So that, you know, left the Australian, you know, the Football Federation Australia in a pretty difficult position. You know, not a lot of time out to the World Cup, need a coach in quickly. There was a lot of discussion about who that might be. In the end, Bert van Marwijk has taken that job, but just as a stopgap. You know, obviously a fairly well-regarded coach, led Holland to the 2010 World Cup final, but he's just there to fill that gap before Graham Arnold, another Australian coach who's actually coached the national team in the past, although not that successfully, until he takes over for a four-year stint.
So now looking into the predictions for this Australian team, obviously, you know, it's going to be hard to predict how they do well in this World Cup, given the tough group that they're in. But we could certainly do some more predicting regarding the team, so to speak. So, Kieran, I just want to ask you, you know, looking into this Australian team, and maybe for those that aren't as familiar, maybe haven't seen them in qualifying or any friendly matches, you know, what's the one thing to really expect for this national team heading into Russia that the fans or pundits or anyone is looking out needs to look out for? And if so, you know, can you give us a possible starting 11 for this Australian side to field in Russia?
Sure. There's quite a lot of uncertainty around the system that the national team will adopt. Ange Postecoglou was a real fan of expressive, you know, pretty football. He played a system with three at the back, which was quite controversial, and some people would say it was unsuccessful. But he really stuck to his guns and played that passing system. Now, this new coach, Van Marwijk, has come in, and no one really knows, you know, what that new system will look like. We had two friendlies recently. The Socceroos were hammered by Norway fairly unexpectedly, 4-1 the other week, and then managed to draw nil all with Colombia. And Colombia are quite a good team, so that was a reasonable result. And we saw, you know, perhaps a change in system, a much more pragmatic approach, which I think Van Marwijk is known for. How that manifests on the field in Russia, it's still too early to tell. I think we'll probably have a back four, Matt Ryan, will be in goals. Trent Sainsbury and Bailey Wright will probably be the centre-back pairing. There's still a bit of uncertainty as to who might be on the flanks. They've been problematic positions for the team for a while now. In the midfield, Mark Milligan and Mille Jednak, the captain, they're sort of stalwart defensive players and have been around the national team for a long time. So if they're both fit and they're both getting a bit older, so that is still an open question. Jednak's had some injury problems this year. If they're both fit, I'd expect them to start probably with, you know, those creative players I've already mentioned, Aaron Moy, Tom Rogic, Mathieu Luongo. Tommy Urich played up front as a bit of a target man under the Ange Postecoglou regime, and not to a whole lot of success, is my opinion. He scored a few goals, but in a lot of big games went missing. And so there's potential that his position may be up for grabs. And then Tim Cahill, as I said, really the Socceroos legend of the current team, he'll probably start on the bench. I don't expect him to be in the first 11, but expect him to come on in the dying minutes of games if Australia need goals.
Let me ask you this. If we get to the Peru match where the Socceroos have no chance of advancing through, does Cahill start that final game, which would probably be his final match at the World Cup?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, obviously they probably don't want to go out that way, but there's a chance, that in some regards, could be a nice send-off for him to start the game. It's his last ever appearance at a World Cup. He's been such a servant for the Socceroos. It was interesting, he actually started against Chile. So the Confederations Cup, Australia lost firstly to Germany and then drew with Cameroon. And so really needed to beat Chile. I think it was by 2 goals or more to progress to the semi-finals. And to everyone's surprise, Postecoglou started Cahill, and he brought a lot of energy. Despite his age, he's a very energetic, enthusiastic player and a real leader on the pitch. And so I wouldn't be shocked to see, even if Australia do need a result against Peru to progress, he's the sort of the wild card player that could inspire the team to a really good performance. And they completely outplayed Chile for most of that game. One all really flattered Chile, which is, a shock result given that Chile was such a good team and obviously went on and went through to the final.
True. Now, let's look at the final section here of our plan where we talk about what the World Cup will mean to the people of Australia. First off, I'd like to ask, what is a reasonable expectation of this Australian team going into this very, very difficult Group C and into this 2018 World Cup?
I think a reasonable expectation for the Socceroos will be to perform admirably, get 1 or 2 draws, and come home, with their head held high, having, not been smashed in 3 consecutive games. That may not seem a very lofty ambitions, but I think that's, the realistic outcome based on those 3 very difficult opponents would probably be to lose to France and then to draw with Denmark and with Peru. And if they did that, I think they'd be fairly happy. Obviously, the desire is to get through to the next round. The Socceroos have done that once before, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, in very controversial circumstances. They lost to Italy in the round of 16 in 2006. And I know that's a controversial topic, but it still haunts the Socceroos. It's still a sore point for Australian football fans to lose to Italy with a somewhat dubious penalty. So I think if the Socceroos have a chance to go back into the round of 16 and potentially even go further in the competition, that would be really important for the national team and for Australia at large. But I think realistically that won't happen. The quality of the group is very high. I think, I'd obviously be very happy if we do make it to the round of 16, but we're definitely facing an uphill battle in Russia.
Sure. Now, also keep in mind, like you'd said, this team is ranked in the 30s in the world under FIFA's world rankings. It's not completely out of the realm to suggest that they would make a very deep run, and maybe if the ball bounces lucky for them once or twice, that they actually win this World Cup. A World Cup victory, what would that mean to the people of Australia and also to the players and coaches?
Yeah, I mean, I personally, I can't, not in my wildest imagination, could I see the Socceroos winning this World Cup. But it would be a seismic event for Australia and Australian sport. You know, Australia is a sport-obsessed country right now. Australia's hosting the Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast, and the nation's attention is turned on that. You know, whenever an Australian national team is playing overseas, they always get a passionate following, and there'll be a lot of Socceroos fans in Russia. But I think the impact of not even winning, but the impact of a run deep into the tournament is to continue the momentum that football is gaining. You know, football is by no means the number one sport in Australia. Realistically, it's probably the fourth or fifth sport behind. And, you know, we have two different codes of rugby. We have our own code, Australian rules football. We have cricket. Tennis is very popular, etc. So, although football in Australia is on the rise, a strong showing in Russia, you know, such as progressing to the round of 16, the quarterfinals, just continues to engage the non-football diehard segment of the population, and continues to increase the prevalence and you know, support for football in Australia. But that said, although the men's national team is a long way from being world beaters, I should probably briefly mention the women's national team, the Matildas. They're currently competing in the Women's Asian Cup, and they are one of the best teams in the world. One of their players, Sam Kerr, is regularly touted as among the best players in the world. So although Australian football, you know, perhaps from an outside perspective, it might not seem to be that much on the rise, and our men's national team is certainly a long way off that golden era around 2006 with the likes of Harry Kuehl, Mark Schwarzer, Lucas Neal, Mark Viduka. There are bright spots for Australian football at the moment.
Certainly are. Gentlemen, I'd like to thank you both for joining me tonight to break down the Socceroos as they make the journey to the 2018 World Cup. Again, for This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network, I am your host, Joe Uccello. Thanks for listening, and good night.